Hello. Happy Valentine's Day. How many of you, when you were a kid, called it Valentine's?
Mm-hmm.
Me too. It's not a holiday I get into much, even when I was young and in the game. But, I happened to be in a food store yesterday, and I saw more guys walking out with red flowers. I want to just say, switch it up, do something different. I guess my I'm such a stick in the mud, but I mean, my getting on a lot of the holidays that we celebrate is because I just hate the commercialization. And even if at the advent of these holidays, there was, a nice foundational idea and intent, it's just now this obligatory, where it is an expectation, an obligation instead of, I don't know. I come from a family that was not, that was sort of this mindset. Just didn't, I guess we sort of believe in spontaneous gift giving, when you see something that you just know someone will love, then you get it. That's the gift day, not some arbitrary day when, again, that expectation, like a sledgehammer over your head. I don't know. Yeah, there was a thought that while I was talking, how do we do this? When you're actually talking, you're being relatively coherent, and another thought comes into your head, manages to slide through. So in your, whatever your brain's kind of peripheral vision, you note it and think, oh, well, talk about that in a second when you're winding up whatever it is you're talking about now. And then you can't remember it. Well, that's just what happened to me. It had something to do with what I was babbling about. Anyway. I at least made it to 3 minutes into the show before I sighed. Yeah. We should all take a mental health assessment every morning. How y'all doing? Some days are better than others. Oh, I know what I was going to say, because my eyes had lit on something that's right here in front of me. A dear friend came over last night and brought me a belated birthday party present. And it is so perfect. And she said, I saw it and thought, I just thought of you. And I thought, I was eager to open it to see what this object was that someone who knows me well said, oh, gotta get that for Lynn. And boy, yeah, she nailed it. It's this incredible sort of, I don't even know how to describe it. It's a wondrous birdhouse. And as she said, it just looked like my kind of birdhouse. Because normally I can't say I'd be into birdhouses. I've gotten into being a bird feeder. And so this is the next step up, a birdhouse. But it is, I can't describe it to you because it's so unusual and simple in its design and just beautiful, colorful. I think that's the other thing that probably, I do love color. Okay, that's all I wanted to tell you. I so love that gift. Earworm of the day. These earworms are getting out of control for me. Every second of the day, there's something in my head that repeats and repeats and repeats. And when I try to sleep, oh, that's the thing. Last night, I could not sleep. Same songs are going around and around and around and around in my head. Songs where I only know like the first, like four lines, let's say, of lyrics. And then I'm just like, so I just keep going back and I'm thinking, oh my God. Anyway, this is a thought I have before I get to the earworm. How, if I can't sleep, because when I lay my head on a pillow and I'm tired and it's night and all my life that has signaled to my brain, sleep. And I can't. I used to be able to, but I can't. My brain is going 90 miles an hour and going into a lot of places I don't even want it to go, which then causes me more. You know, so that, what I want to know, here's the thought I had. Here am I, you know, nobody. How does somebody like Joe Biden, like the president, sleep? How do they turn off their brains? I'm always blown away by people who have the capacity to just fall asleep immediately, especially people who have prodigious brains. You know, the kind you think are just going a mile a minute constantly. My sister-in-law is one of those. I mean, she's just brilliant, but bang, she closes her eyes, bout, out. What a gift that is. But this is one of the reasons I could never be the president of the United States, because I would never, ever, ever, ever sleep, ever. How do they do it? How do they let go? Wow. Anyway, the earworm, it got into my head because I saw a documentary, and I recommend it highly. It was fun on Netflix about the making of We Are the World. So that's the earworm. And it is interesting, mind-blowing. You get to see so many of your favorite singers in a different way, interacting with other. I mean, it was such a huge gathering of the biggest musical stars. The egos in that room, I can't even begin to imagine. And all of them used to commanding a stage by themselves and now standing on risers like they're nobody in particular on a in a chorus. And it's fascinating because you see the creative process of how that song came together. And it was right down to the wire. They were making that song up almost as they went along. And who were the troublemakers? Who walked out? Someone did walk out. I would say that in looking at it, the most uncomfortable human at that recording session appeared to be Bob Dylan. I couldn't even, I didn't know he was there. He looked, oh God. It's wonderful. So it's on Netflix. I hope you have Netflix. If you don't, I don't know. I don't know what to say. Find a friend who has Netflix and watch. I don't even know what it's called. Is it called We Are the World? Lionel Richie is the sort of the major domo of it. It's just, it's fun. And for those of us in need of distraction these days, I cannot recommend anything more highly. Just saying. All right. Are you thinking what I'm thinking? Is she going to continue this avoidance of all things important? Not that distraction is not important in these days. Okay, here we go. One. Yay. The Democrats pick up another House seat, special election. The seat that was George Santos's, and the Republicans is now again in the hands of the Democrats. So that razor-thin majority that the Republicans have continues to be reduced. By the way, another special election was held yesterday that didn't get a lot of attention, but it too went to a Democrat, and that was a special election for the Pennsylvania legislature. We, you know, the Democrats had, speaking of razor thin, finally managed to flip the House. And by, you know, so one vote margin, and then I forget who, but somebody decided that they wanted to do something else. And so that went, that seat came up, and the legislature, the legislative House chamber was locked in a tie for both sides. And this special election finally put it back into the Democrats' hands. Here I've got the guy's name. He's Democrat Jim Prokopiak. Looks like he won. And so the chamber is no longer deadlocked, 101 Republicans to 101 Democrats. It's now, well, you figure it out, it's 102 Democrats and 100 Republicans. So that was a flip too that happened. And so the Democrats winning of special election, this streak continues. So I do want to say this about the seat that that Santos had and now is held by a Democrat. The Republicans put up, I don't know if you paid attention to this, put up a black woman. Anytime Republicans put up a black woman, I am thinking, you know, again, it's always performative. I know what we'll do. Let's find a woman, a black. But they, boy, did they go to town on this one. She's not only a black. She was not, well, she is. She's black. She's an immigrant. She's Jewish. And she served in the Israeli military. Hello? And she's good looking. I'm just saying. That was the Republicans, and she's no idiot. I mean, she was, but she's a effing Republican. But she did not pay proper attention and deference to you-know-who. And I believe I forgot what disgusting thing he called her on his that Truth Social thing after she lost. He said, well, of course, she, you know, called her some kind of awful woman. Well, yeah. I don't know. So anyway, but her history was fascinating. I mean, she was born in Ethiopia. There was always a large population of Jews in Ethiopia, black Jews, so much for Jews being white, black Jews. And There was an incredible effort on the part of the Israelis at one point to airlift as many as they could out and get them to safety in Israel when Ethiopia was going through some difficult times, shall we say. So she ended up being airlifted to Israel, became an Israeli citizen, served in the Israeli Defense Forces, and then ends up, I don't know, at some point she came to the United States. But she lost, thank God. So, that's all I want to say about that. But that's all that is, you know, good news, good news. You know, that woman that I was just talking about, I can't remember her name, has a strange name like Pillip or something. I don't know. She, her obit will be one of those obits that would fascinate me. It would be, you know, like, what? What? How does that even happen? But she will not be in the Congress, at least yet. Well, you know, the Republicans were humiliated when they tried to impeach the Homeland Secretary Mayorkas. And so they waited until I think it was Steve Scalise came back from whatever cancer treatment he's having, stem cell I don't know. But he came back, and that was the vote they needed. So they held the vote again last night. And they did something that hasn't been done in over 150 years, because they're amazing. They impeached a sitting cabinet member for nothing, because they just don't like them. It is, again, as Republicans do, meaningless, performative, and will get nowhere. It's just another stage that they have put up to get attention so that they can spread their lies and their disinformation. And media willingly covering it all. Speaking of media, I know I get the New York effing Times. Front page today, headline, a press secretary's role is scrutinized as an official is elevated. Beneath that, a picture of the White House press secretary, Corinne Jean-Pierre, that good-looking black woman. And she is not at the lectern. She is to the side of the lectern. And at the lectern is a guy whose face I am starting to recognize, because he's out there a lot. And his name is John Kirby. And he's a former Navy admiral who's he's the go-to guy on things having to do with foreign affairs and Gaza. That's how he got. So what happened is, when Gaza happened, he was invited in to the press briefings, because that's what most of the questions were. And the press secretary, you know, and this happens, stepped to the side to let him, who had much more expertise, to respond. Well, leave it to the navel-gazing, insular press corps that covers Washington to lose sight of what their job is. I'll read one line. a lot of reporters in the briefing room now are focusing on things like who got the most time at the lectern during the briefing, her or him. They're actually watching their watches and toting up numbers so that they can do stories about how a black, openly gay female White House press secretary is being elbowed out of her spot by a white male, and how this is going to cause Biden more trouble. This is a totally manufactured story about nothing. And man, it jumps off the front page and then goes into the middle of the paper. And whoa, it just won't stop. So here is, this is what media do. Is that right? Always sounds so odd. They want to create trouble. If it's a slow day, you gotta create a story, and a story that creates division and fits into this current narrative. And so this is an attempt to put the White House in the uncomfortable position of having to say, no, we're not shoving Corinne out. It's just that John, blah, 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 blah. This, and here's the thing that makes me insane. Obviously, there would not be any story here, even to this idiotic press corps, if one person wasn't black. And the cherry on top, gay. Oh, and wow, let's put a second cherry on top, or whipped cream, female. And the other is a white guy. I gotta tell you, I am so sick of it. I am so sick at this lens that so many people have to be looking through all of the time. Everything has to be a signifier of some kind of discrimination or power play or racism. Or white, you know, that is, what if these two people in this picture were both women? Is there a story? Oh, maybe a cat fight story. If it were two black people, is there a story? No. And somewhere, yeah, in the article, it does say the word perception. That's right. It says, so the New York Times covers this front page and seemingly suggests that it's much to do about nothing. But then on the other hand, replete with two pictures, a whole big to do. But they say the perception in Washington that President Biden has allowed Admiral Kirby, who is white, to upstage a black woman as the face of his White House, has turned this into a third rail subject, meaning dangerous one politically. Made up. It is all made up. I really hate a lot of the editorial decisions the New York Times makes. I hate it. And they're outrageous. We deserve better in these times. We certainly don't need to be distracted by BS like that. It could also be because they have elevated him to another position, that they really think he's great, and they might think he's better at it than she. I don't know. I don't watch the press briefings. I'm not a masochist. So, as you know, Donald Trump asked the Supreme Court to rule that, in fact, he was immune from a criminal prosecution, even though this lower court wrote that perfect decision saying, what the fuck? But Trump's attorneys said to the court, we want you to review this. And the Supreme Court has responded. They responded to the other side, to Jack Smith and the Department of Justice bringing the case in the first place. And they said to him, we want to hear what you have to say. We've heard from Trump's lawyers. We want to hear what you have to say, and we will give you 1 week to respond. Now, already this is troubling in that no response is necessary. Giving it a week plays into Trump's hands of slowing it down, delaying it. Now, obviously, Jack Smith doesn't have to wait a week, and he won't. He can respond immediately. But the fact that the court is, in this respect, aiding and abetting the slow walking that Trump employs to avoid justice is outrageous. And also given the fact that everyone thinks that there's no way that they will find in Trump's favor. I don't know. God. It's going to be a hard, guys, it's just going to be a rough time. I mean, half the news is Trump's legal stuff. Half of it. He goes from one court to another with the media tagging along. He's living, as they say, rent-free inside all of our heads. This vile little horrible human. Wow. And all I can say, and I come back to over and over again, the fact that this vile, horrible little human has reached this stature, historical, international stature, and he's there because of not the whole world, he's there because of Americans. It is so damning of us. It is so humiliating. It's hard to stand up proud. I'm an American. And this horror show is who we choose who a goodly percentage of the populace adores? God. I read some piece today, I can't remember where, it said that the Republican Party has ceased to exist. It is really just a wholly owned subsidiary of Trump, Inc. now, which is true. Which is true. I mean, you see, he's taken, you know, he's got McDaniel out at the Republican National Committee, and he's going to replace her with his daughter-in-law and some butt-kissing creep from I can't remember where. Unbelievable. This is autocracy. This is how an autocrat behaves. He trusts nobody. So there's just this small circle of total sycophants that are tolerated. And even they, you know, are walking on eggshells at all times. And the Republican Party, an entire party, walks on eggshells now for fear of this man. Unbelievable. Has anybody checked on the Founding Fathers' graves? Is there like seismic activity going on there? A sort of, you know, like gyroscopic effect? Somebody bring a, you know, a Richter scale over and see if there's some perceptible movement. I think it was in the Washington Post. No, it was in the Times. A story about the unbelievable bigoted comments that now come with regularity out of the mouths of Republican office holders. And even though Democrats might insist on an apology. Of course, this is the Trump Inc. party. No apology is forthcoming. In fact, quite the opposite, because the CEO says, you never apologize. You double down. So, Marjorie Taylor Greene has been just unleashing incredible invective on a fellow member of the House, Ilhan Omar. And it's racist. It's just flat out racist. You have another member of the House, Republican, from Texas, calling the husband of a black representative a thug. Uh-huh. And then he also said of the congresswoman, the reason she received so many death threats is because she's so loud. These are just racist tropes that what seemed funny at the time, Tom Cotton grilling that, I don't know, who it was, the TikTok head about being Chinese because he looks Asian. And the guy kept saying, I'm a native of Singapore. Singapore, Senator. Yes, but do you have a Chinese passport? I'm Singapore. But, you know, it's just one of those, you know, what my father back in the day used to call Orientals. In the impeachment report for Mayorkas, who, by the way, is a Jew and an immigrant from Cuba, that was filled with all kinds of nasty, ugly little anti-Semitic tropes. They called him, well, one of the Republican call them a reptile with no balls. Jeez. And everything I just told you was just stuff that happened in a 4-day period. And as I said, the language will continue to get uglier and uglier and uglier. Lest you think for a minute that what this Trump Inc. party is. I forgot where that sentence started. Lest you think for a minute where this Trump party is. I think I have to back up and rephrase that. It's racist. It's a party for white folks. Christian. White folks. Straight. White folks. But then, you know, this is the, when he was president, called African countries shithole countries, right? Very fine people on both sides, had a murderous, racist rally, telling members of Congress to go back where you came from, because assuming that they somehow weren't Americans because they're people of color, things he said about Nikki Haley. Same thing. This is clear. And listen to what Trump's campaign spokesman said when asked about this. President Trump is a truth teller. Okay. I'm serious about, yeah, the head spins. The founding fathers spin in their graves. Our heads spin on their. Do we have an axis? I guess the spine. President Trump is a truth teller, this SOB says. And the more people who follow his lead and speak their mind, the better. That's in lieu of an apology for all of the dog whistles. Wow. So anyway, if you encounter anyone in the course of your day that doesn't see the danger, then it is up to you to at least tell them something. Even go so far as to say you are wrong. Tell them the founding fathers are spinning in their graves. Oh, I don't know. I'm blown away by how many people I know who come from families that are just filled with Trump supporters. And they're the outliers. They're the black sheep. I can't imagine how difficult that is. And I imagine there will be estrangements within families, which is always sad. Heaven knows in the Civil War there were such estrangements. But most of the people I know just go out of their way to avoid. I don't know. And I am so lucky that, you know, my immediate family, the family that I get together with, we have no such troubles. The only troubles we have is, people like me being thought of as wishy-washy moderate types, which, believe me, gets us into some heavy-duty fighting, too. a story today about there's two things in this country, two huge problems that I don't. Oh, let's make that three. God, two. Yeah, no. Yeah, one, two, three. Three huge problems that we do not address. And it also says, it's a damning statement about us. And I include Democrats in this. One, the border. Two, homelessness and affordability of something as basic as a roof overhead. And three, and believe me, there's a whole bunch of others, but these are the big three as far as I'm concerned. Guns, okay? And I didn't say them in any order of, you know, guns might be the number one. And speaking of guns, so I was reading more about the woman who went into that church intending to blow a whole bunch of people away with her AR-15 and instead got taken out herself, as did, well, she brought her boy. Here, it's take your son to work day. Come on, honey, we're going to go into a church and blow people away. He's 7 years old. When they took out his mom, a bullet went through his head. He clings to life. And I was reading a story about how his grandmother, the mother of his father, had tried mightily to get some authorities to do something. That when her grandson, when she was with him once, handed her a gun from his diaper bag. So there were so many efforts on the part of family members and others. There were reports to the police. There were reports to child welfare. There were reports all over and over and over again. This woman had been in a psychiatric hospital. And with all of that history, she was able to buy more guns and keep her child by her side. And in reading the article, this is again in the Times today. It said this: the Montgomery County Sheriff's Office directed questions to the Conroe Police Department, which did not respond. A spokeswoman for the Texas Department of Family and Protective Services said that the agency was investigating. But was prevented by law from discussing confidential family matters. So in other words, every agency that was supposed to protect this child failed, despite the fact that they were called many times. The grandmother even had gone to the church and ask someone there if there was any way somebody could maybe talk to her, give her counseling. The church has now said, no one could be found who remembered speaking with her I'm not saying it didn't happen, but I have no one that has a recollection of that at all. This woman's mother attended services. Okay. I am just saying the failure of us to protect the least of us, children, the homeless, the desperate, the sick, is such a condemnation. And maybe it is only fitting and proper that such a derelict nation has elevated a lowlife like Donald Trump to such a position of power. Hey, here's some good news, and I'm not even that into it. University of Pittsburgh Panthers basketball team, which isn't one of the greats, but they did something really impressive on the road last night. They beat the Virginia men's basketball team and beat them well. And thus ended, I think, the longest running home game winning streak in the country. So the Pitt Panthers go to Virginia, where that team, I guess the Cavaliers, right, had won. Their fans had not seen a loss in years, the longest streak in history. The Panthers ended it last night. Just saying. Little hometown pride here. And then I noted when I was reading about it, you know what the coach's name, the Virginia coach's name is? Tony Bennett. It'd be hard, wouldn't it? Having a name where you have to, you know, endure the same old remarks every time you say, "Hi, I'm Tony Bennett. I thought he died last year. Oh, could you sing me 'I Left My Heart'?" And say, you know, I just, can you imagine? And there's got to be a lot of guys named James Bond, you know, or something like that. I mean, just has to, oh my God. I'm glad I have an innocuous name, but it's, okay, I saw this, and it intrigued me. It's from the Washington Post, and it's something about how they are going to institute a new, I guess, column on the in the opinion section. And a guy named, what is his name? Daniel Pink. I wouldn't want that for a last name either. I'm just saying. Daniel Pink will be at the helm. And they're calling this column, "Why Not?" And the intent of the column, he says, and I'll look forward to this. He says he's going to offer up an idea, a single idea that could improve our lives or improve our country. And it might be audacious or surprising or like what, but he wants to put out ideas that are always dismissed out of hand in this country. And he was responding with, "Why not?" he gives a few examples. Okay. And I what I love about this is it does test our recalcitrance to our sort of like, you know, knee-jerk responses, our failure of imagination. Remember when America was known as that country with a can-do attitude? Well, we're a country now with a can't-do attitude. And this guy wants to challenge that. So here's some examples he came up with, and I'll throw them out to you, and you can see if you're... Okay. He says, for example, why not pay public school teachers a minimum salary of $100,000? I'm just going to let you sit there with that, because that's outrageous, right? Supposedly. Here's another one. Why not relocate the U.S. House and Senate to a different city every few years? I love that one. I love that one. Well, I think that one, would that run into some constitutional issues? I don't think the Constitution specifically says, because there wasn't, Washington, D.C. wasn't even the, it doesn't say, they just have to, yeah, they meet in Congress together. And I suppose, first of all, what I like about it is it gets them out of their comfort zone. It also gets them away from that incorporated press corps and the reach of all of the institutions meant to pollute the process. The I'm not even 81 years old. Lobbyists. Thank you. Here's another one I really like, a question he throws out. Okay, in our companies, why not create a new job category for people over 65 as mentors to young employees that would ease the transition to retirement and prepare the next generation of workers? What do you think of that one? Mm-hmm. I think that one's got merit too. And here's another beaut that does have to do with gift giving, which I sort of mentioned when I said, did I ever say Happy Valentine's Day? Yeah, I did. He says this, in our families, why not give presents on our birthdays rather than receive them? Wow. Now that's radical, but I love it. And he goes on to say that the intent of this column will be to sort of, you know, jolt us into widening our view. You know, raising our sights, because we're also hunkered down and we're also in the do-nothing kind of state. And he says, this is the intent, he says, for each idea, I'll run the numbers, like for the let's pay school teachers $100,000 minimum. For each idea, I'll run the numbers and analyze the cost and the feasibility. I'll interview, you know, scholars, public officials, frontline workers to gather counter arguments and anticipate the negatives and pitfalls. I'll visit people in places where versions of this idea, whatever I'm suggesting, may have been tried, to learn from whatever experience they had. And he says, at the core are three values that have become increasingly scarce, and we need to rescue them from that scarcity. He says, one, we need to be more curious and less certain. So curiosity over certainty. He says, you want certainty? You ain't going to be reading this. Because the column's called Why Not? And the questions will be, I wonder if, and I don't know. He said, you'll never hear me say, I'm sure. He said, the reality is this world is an uncertain, chaotic place. And curiosity and intellectual humility are the solvents that can unstick our gears. He also says he wants to elevate openness over cynicism. He said, you know, social psychologists have often said that people who are critical and cynical are perceived to be more intelligent. But science has shown that this is dead wrong. The cynical genius illusion is what it's called. The more accurate predictor of intelligence is openness, being receptive to new experience and ideas. These are all ways that we can all work on ourselves, right? Cynicism, man, that's easy. But it's hollow. Openness, Ike. Tougher, but there's opportunity in it. And then he says that the other thing is he wants people to, he said, I don't want you to finish one of my columns and say, boy, he's right. He said, the hope is that you might, in fact, text a friend or turn to someone by your side and ask, do you think this is makes sense? And then talk about it. He says, what I'm hoping is that I'll start conversations. And someone will say, wait, that is, yeah, but how about this, right? Or I've got a better idea, maybe. So he sees this column he's going to write as a catalyst. Unlike what columns usually are, is, you know, and here's what I'm saying about this and what we have to do and yada, yada, yada. No. So it's going to be called Why Not? He said, we're inventing a new category of journalism. This won't be opinion journalism. This won't be explanatory journalism. This won't be investigative journalism. He says, I'm calling it possibility journalism. Why not? That makes me feel good just thinking about it. Okie doke, guys. Why not? Just saying. Talk to you tomorrow.
Lynn Cullen Live, Monday through Thursday from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. and archived at pghcitypaper.com. The opinions expressed on Lynn Cullen Live are those of the host and do not necessarily reflect the viewpoints of Pittsburgh City Paper or its advertisers.